Peace. You're tuned into the Edible Activist Podcast. I am your host and favorite edible activist, Melissa L. Jones. On this show, we feed you empowering narratives and perspectives from the voices of emerging Black people and people of color in food and agriculture who are stewarding the land, healing communities, and advocating for food justice and economic power across the globe. Our rich contributions and stories exemplify the spirit of activism in their own edible way. Let's get started. Falani, let's get started. Let's introduce our viewers to who you are.
Sure.
You are from DC. Mm-hmm. You are from DC. This is your city. And but there's so much to share about your roots and your lineage and your family and where you're rooted in, right? You were born here, raised here, but still like where your roots still live and, where your roots are connected to, right? And so we mentioned North Carolina, but let's start with your lineage, and sharing a bit of the fusion of DC and North Carolina, because, we're then from there going to go into the gardening, journey. So you're gonna take us on a walk, right?
Yes.
And so I am down for the journey. And okay. This is actually part of a story that I haven't heard, fully. So yeah. I'm gonna sit back because all I want to learn more.
Okay. Well, I was born in Washington, D.C., Providence Hospital. I grew up uptown off of Georgia Avenue and Harvard Street. I lived in that house all my life until I moved out as an adult, young adult. But my summers were spent in North Carolina. My father's side is from North Carolina. My mother's side is from Alabama and Casita, Georgia. But of course, that's deep, deep down in the South. So We didn't go down there as much. So North Carolina was just like a hop, skip, and a jump. So every summer, my parents took us down, left us there for weeks. And that's where I was able to grow up homesteading with my grandparents. And I would say, as a city girl, I did not like it that much as a child because I wanted to be on the block, jumping double dutch and going to the corner store, staying hip to all the uptown happenings and sneaking out to the go-go's and all of that good stuff. But as I started to become an adult, I really appreciated those slow Southern summers where we were able to just grow up in the family village and go from house to house and play outside all day without having to worry about, like the crazy things that would happen in the city. And so therefore, I went to DC public schools. I graduated from Dunbar. I was very much a street girl. I love running the streets. And like I said, going to go-go's with my friends and going from block to block on feet and community to community, neighborhood to neighborhood. And so I went to my father when he came up here. His uncle brought him up to D.C. for a better life than the country, and he worked at Howard so that we could all go to school free. So I went to Howard. It was cool. It was kind of like a culture shock because the university was in my neighborhood and it was a bunch of uppity Black folks and stuff like that. But I went through the 4 years because of the sacrifice my father made, and my mom ended up working there too. So I studied political science. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer because I like to debate and argue. But I'm really an artist at heart. So I left with my bachelor's and I started traveling, and I always kind of kept a camera with me. So I became a filmmaker, really just documenting my travels and stuff to bring it back home and show my family who couldn't travel. I started also documenting elders in my family. And I hadn't realized that this was something that my father did. He started telling stories about our family to people when he moved to DC, and he met this, and this filmmaker was kind of fascinated, a Howard student. And he traveled with my father to North Carolina, and I digitized that footage. So I have footage of my great grandpa on his deathbed, and my father would also go throughout his family village and interview, not everything on camera. That was the only thing we have on camera, but he would always interview the elders. So I was basically, I didn't realize again until kind of recently that I took the documenting up from my father. And so, yeah.
Isn't that something to reflect back on? Like, picking up on, okay, like, who was the griot in the family? You know, who was the storyteller in the family? Who was everybody was gardening growing yeah. back then. So it was like yeah. everybody. But I do want, thank you for sharing that. First of all, I just have to point out, y'all, like, Filani's like background is stunning. The hues, the orange, like this whole scene she's giving, it's giving. All right. Like it is giving. All right. So I just need to shout that out. But, oh my gosh. Like the story of you spending summers in North Carolina, the stories are so familiar, right? And so familiar in that when I'm having, you know, dialogue with other, you know, folks or peers my age, it's like the same, it's the same story in that, listen, I had to go to grandma's house in the summertime. They made us tend to the farm, tend mm-hmm. to this, and we didn't want any parts of it whatsoever. And then you're brought up, you know, you're matured and you're of age and you look back and you're like, oh my goodness. So looking back at the times that you spent in North Carolina, I'm sure I'm going to assume that it offered some grounding, you know, that in between time of like being in the country and then spending time and then being in the city, which obviously two totally different geographics, right? But I think just looking back at that, like what else do you pull from those moments of being in the South during the summers and how, you know, how that's reflected in your work as a creative, your work as a grower, you know, yeah. as a filmmaker? 'Cause I mean, it's so much to pull from.
Yeah. I would say, I pull a lot of kinship and love and talks in the kitchen and the food and the dishes and the recipes and, you know, like the hot water cornbread and, you know, stuff like that. The corn pudding, all of that good old country stuff, you know. And I come from my father's mom and dad come from the same county, and they're really big families. And then I have, and then my step grandpa's side too. So it was like I was able to have three families, you know, sets of families, and then of course those sides get extended, you know, as well. So Franklin County is not so big, and the town we're from is not big at all. I think it's like 900 people there, probably 600 of them are family. So I pull a lot of unconditional love, community, talks. You know, my family is so close. They talk about everything. Even sometimes I would go back down like, oh my gosh, you told your mother that, or you sat at the table and told them that. But they are all really, really connected, very, I would say, communal oriented. Is very much like how things are in Africa. So, yeah,
I had to put that up really quickly. So first of all, that's my sister. Shout out to my sister for always showing up. Hot water cornbread. Please explain that. Centeria, don't get up here and act like you don't know what hot water cornbread is, okay? Because grandma will be in the kitchen whipping it up without any other ingredients besides the mix and some water, flour, water, or cornmeal. I'm sorry, cornmeal and water. Yes.
Yeah, and that probably came from somewhere they couldn't get to that milk and them eggs.
Exactly, Filani. Exactly.
And they made it happen. And then we also have I wouldn't call it like a hush puppy. It's kind of like a corn fritter that on my grandpa's side we make, and it is really, really tasty, and it's cornmeal, flour, a little sugar, and I don't recall that is it egg in there? I think it may be egg. I don't make it much. But then that's dropped down and fried, and it's really, really good. I think the Native Americans call it fry bread.
Fry bread, okay.
So, all of those dishes are dear. And even like, you know, the smells of the pine trees and cedar and taking them little trips to town, you know, and having sleeping with my cousins on pallets, my siblings and cousins, we will pile up. Like sometimes we are in grandma's house because she added on a family room, but we be looking over to the house side, like the original house side, like how in the world that all of us used to fit in.
I know.
It's crazy.
I just get like jitters inside. Like, so Filani and I have had multiple conversations, y'all, outside of this podcast about our family. And I feel like our family story is so much alike. And this show is about you, Filani, but I have to share.
No, it's a combo. Like,
spending time, and I know my sister's here, my cousins may be here, but just looking back to all the times that we spent in Mississippi coming up, and just thinking about times of like my sister being on the back of like my grandfather, my grandmother's like pickup truck to go like throw newspapers out, right? Mm-hmm. Like just those moments, right? Like us just like the sap on like the back of on the tree that you just remember getting your hands all sticky and everything on the back of it. Like it's those moments that, you know, even as like a filmmaker, right? And a griot and a filmmaker, just looking back, I feel like there's just some moments that you just can't even, they're with you.
Yeah.
And you can, obviously, well, this is back then when you were experiencing them, but just even trying to document them now, those are keepsakes. And actually thinking about a conversation I had with Jennifer, who's in the building, which is an alum, we talked about this whole thing about inheritance, right? That's not necessarily just a tangible thing, you know, that someone's giving you or a house. It's those moments.
Yeah.
So those moments that you spent in North Carolina, like you inherited all those moments.
Yes.
Like, and I think it's just so beautiful to think of it that way, especially looking back, because you can't sell those moments. You know, they're not like they're invaluable.
Yeah.
And they contribute to who you are, and being able to share that is just, it's so rich.
Yeah, it is really, really rich. And even going back.
Now, yes, Myra, and eating honeysuckle right off the bush as a kid. Yes.
So. Yes, indeed. There we go. That's it right there.
Yes.
Going right and sucking them honeysuckles. Oh my gosh. They don't even taste the same no more.
They don't. I haven't tried because I don't know what they be doing to the lawns and stuff now. I don't even.
When I'm in the country, I try.
Well, yeah, that's different. Here, I'm not. Nostalgia. Yes.
Yeah. Tamara. And it's funny that you said that, Smith.
Tamara. You call her Myra.
Tamara, it's funny that you said that because I took a recent trip down there and I went to my great grandfather's home place in Oxford. And I was walking with a cousin that I had just met that day. I went to get a copy of her mom's book. Her mom wrote a book on, how do I put this thing?
Yeah, we can see it. The history of.
Hold on. I'm tripping because I'm looking. There you go. Her mom wrote a book on our family.
Wow.
And so I wanted to get a copy of it. And I was like, oh, here goes some honeysuckles. And I took it off and sucked it. She said, I haven't ate one of them in forever. And she lives right down there. So I think, but she just moved back. She was living in Raleigh. But I think sometimes when you move away and you get away from, you know, those country things such as picking honeysuckles or going to pick a hard-ass good apple off the tree, right off the tree. Them apples used to be good, hard and sweet. Nice, tough skin, you know, not all of this stuff that you see now. But I think we get away from it and... And when I did it, it was so nostalgic. It just took me back, you know, to a time, which brings me to a term that I just learned during the passing of one of my mentors. She was a photographer who photographed a lot of farmers and a lot of people like Fannie Lou Hamer, a lot of folks during the civil rights era. Her name was Dr. Doris Derby. And I went to her online obituary thing, and this guy had commented and said, I'm going to miss our conversations on nostalgic farming. And I was like, what is that? Nostalgia of farming. And so I looked into it. It's not a lot of stuff out there, but it's about really using practices, you know, that were there, you know, back in the day. And just, I still don't understand it much, but I put my own twist to it is like having those memories of farming in your head, you know, while you're farming and planting those similar crops and things like that. Because our parents got away from farming. And I can understand why it was a lot of, trauma related to it. You know, my dad is, I think he's 67, and he had to pick cotton as a child with his grandparents. So a lot of them, when they came up north, they didn't really want nothing to do with it. So we have like a generation gap between people who farmed, and then you have the people who stopped, the generation who stopped farming because they sold them to go to college and go get a job and this and that. And then you have people like myself who is up north and miss those homegrown tomatoes. And it's really my dad who kept saying, you need a garden. You need to grow your own food. You don't even need to use a washing machine. Go buy one of them. Because we used to have a hand washer and all that. My father's a real country
grid
type guy. I said, I am not doing all that. And he was so serious, girl. So in 2015, well, in 2010, I had a few depressive episodes leading up to like 2015. And so he kept saying, you need to guard it. Get your own, sign up in the community plot. And so in 2015, I was on a waiting list for a while. I finally was able to get a plot in my community. And that's when I started growing from seed. And the first 2 years, I had my dad's help, and my sister, she's scared of bugs, so she'd come out and water and harvest.
Sounds like someone I know.
Oh my god, it could be a gnat. You'd think it's a scorpion on that girl.
Child, my sister will like literally swing at a fly, all right, with full force.
Yeah. So okay, so we got the same sister, because
yes, exactly.
There goes another commonality.
Yes. So
I started growing and I had a lot of surplus of crops because I live by myself. So I would give, you know, take some of the produce uptown to my family. Then everybody moved down south. So I was like, what am I going to do with all of this? So I just started to start curating personalized farm boxes because I didn't have enough to like do no whole like CSA share type vibe. So I said, well, I do have enough to provide for one person, you know. And so I would pick seasonal produce, bake a sweet good, and then whip up a skincare product, a homemade skincare product. And that's how that was the starting of Bird's Nest.
Yes. Yes. That was such a beautiful segue. I didn't even have to ask. I didn't even have to ask. And that's why, you know, I have to start with, all right, like, where are these roots? Where did you spend your time? Let's make that connection, right? And I want folks to know, because your nickname, don't people call you Bird, right?
Yes. And yeah, they call me Lonnie Bird.
Lonnie Bird.
Or Birdie. Just Birdie.
Yes.
And if you're not family, I do not like strangers calling me that. So
I understand. I understand. Yeah. We have got to be. We them vibes got to be cool. And I got to like you to call me by my nickname.
Totally. You know. And so, yeah, you got to be like real in to call me Bird or Birdie. So if somebody in the public saying Bird, I know that's family. And so it's interesting because I came up with Bird's Nest like years ago because I used to, well, I still do. I travel throughout the African diaspora and I always team up with artisans and purchase like a wholesale package of goods and come back and sell them. So the idea was to start making curated boxes with different goods from the different places that I travel. So when I started growing produce, I was like, well, I'm going to keep, and I used to make earrings too. So I was like, well, I'm going to keep Bird's Nest because it can translate to just about anything. So yeah, so it's still Bird's Nest. And I put the box to it because I was going to be either shipping boxes of perishable, non-perishable goods, or, you know, putting stuff in a produce box like you bought from me.
Yes. And let me make that connection. So, like, as I said, I recently met Falani, but it feels like I've known her for quite some time, right? And so, for you all that may not have caught this, Falani is my very special guest in both my intro and my outro video for the Edible Activist podcast trailer. That shout out to Steve of All or Nothing Studios, like, beautifully produced. All right. We were there in that hot ass sun on that hot day. And Falani, just again, her spirit. Actually, and I met her prior to that. So shout out to Chrissy of Charismatic Creations, who put together a wonderful dinner where I met Falani and then I connected with Falani again. Where Falani is actually a resident farmer and grower at New Brooklyn Farms in Mount Rainier. And so they allowed me to come into the space, share space with them. And Falani just so happened, she was a part of it. And I'm so glad. Everything is divine because it was not, we didn't plan it that way. We did not plan it that way. And the production turned out beautiful. The synergy was amazing. And so the beautiful part about that day was, we were actually picking greens. So, you know, Falani grows like the most amazing, amazing greens, lettuce, spinach, like all the good things that our body needs, okay, that our gut needs. And so she has these beautiful boxes. I mean, like, goodness gracious, like, and y'all, I'm a sucker for stuff that's done, that's well done and well branded, okay, with some thought and intentionality. So like, it was just all the things, but she has this beautiful box and this beautiful branding. It's Bird's Nest box. And so where Steve is capturing footage, but we're actually holding real conversation and we're actually really laughing and we're actually talking about like our family and our history. And she's showing me her greens and we're picking them and I'm filling this big box of like tasty greens in Bird's Nest box. And so I had to make that connection, and I had to let y'all know. So when you do watch the outro, and you better stick around and watch the outro, that is Filani. And so I was just blessed to be able to make that connection. And thank you for sharing and segueing into how Bird's Nest box came about. Because I love, first, again, I just love the branding. I love the whole concept, but it's not even just a concept. It's like, this is part of who you are, right? This is just something else that was birthed out of, you know, what your family knew, you know, and being in North Carolina, and being, you know, being down south, and having your dad help you, you know, grow food, and you know, your first like garden beds and stuff. So I just love how it all just comes together just amazingly, just beautiful. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for making that connection. Thank you so much. So the other thing that I wanted to chat about too was that again, I mentioned that Filani is a filmmaker. And more recently, you had traveled to, oh gosh, I'm drawing. We had a whole conversation around
Guinea-Bissau.
Guinea-Bissau, that's right. And I mean, oh my gosh, I wish that we could see like part two. Like Filani is working on like a whole film project around that, was able to connect with some really amazing agriculturists, you know, there, and just seeing their dynamic work and how they grow, whole nother climate, whole nother continent, like whole nother sphere. And so not just your work here, you know, domestically or just here within the city, just like your travels and connecting with others in this space as well. It's just really freaking amazing. But what I do want to do is I want to take a moment, because I've done this before. I just want to like kind of just drool over your Instagram page because it's beautiful.
Thank you.
And you share so much of yourself and your family, Filani. You really do.
Thank you, Melissa.
And I just want folks to be able to see it. So y'all give me a moment. I'm going to get it right this time, I promise. but I do want people to be able to see your work. And because it's amazing.
And follow while y'all at it. I'm actually dropping a cool product within the next 2 days. So
yes. All right. So y'all, this is Filani right here. This is me and this is Filani. Okay. All right. Oh my gosh. But I just want, there are a few photos in particular, but y'all, look at like these amazing, like beautiful photos of Filani and her family. And these are the photos that just get me Filani.
Oh
my goodness.
My great grandparents.
Oh my goodness.
Ellen Williams Spivey and Charlie Spivey.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are just amazing. Like you share so much of your family roots and your lineage, and these old photographs like are just
Everything. That was in the archive. I don't know who that is.
It's okay.
Relative. It was in my great grandmother's picture box. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Just to like be able to touch this. Look at this bird, y'all. I love it. Here we go. So y'all can see more vividly. That's Filani. That's me. Okay. Yes. The other thing that I forgot to mention, and I don't know how, Filani is a badass cook, y'all. I think cook is actually an understatement. I want to find another word, but let me tell y'all, her quiche is everything. It is everything. Okay.
Thank you, cousin.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, y'all go follow Bird's Nest Box on Instagram. There you see, screenshot it, follow her. I mean, your photos, I mean, everything just tells a story. Like, and she'll let you know when she's going back to see her family down south. She's going to let you know when she harvested, what she's cooking. And I mean, everything that we're talking about here, it's just a whole, she loved a go-go, y'all. And I know exactly where this is. But it's beautiful. Yeah. When people do see your work, you know, which it's best in person, but anybody's come on your page and they see your work, what do you really want them to walk away with? Because it's gosh, it's a big pot of soup with so many like amazing like fresh ingredients. Just to soak
just
in.
Really authenticity, you know, connection. And just like, you know, during our conversations, we share a lot of similar experiences. So I hope that I could touch on people's nostalgia and even encourage others to get connected with their family and sit with the elders, talk to them. It's so much to learn. If we just kind of put down the phone and ask questions, converse with them, because, you know, they've been through so much that oftentimes they're not cognitive enough to be like, oh, this story is important, I should share it, you know. So if they're not probed or asked, they sit with these stories that are so grand. And if we don't ask them, they will depart with these stories. And so that's my intention, because I'm quite personal. But I realize even in meeting people or talking to people, even some of my close friends, and they really admire how close knit my family is. And if you ever had the opportunity to come down North Carolina, you will see that the pictures are not staged. This is, the love is really real. And so, you know, if you really not in, you will not be coming down there with me, because my family is so loving and they take people in, and once you in, they like, okay. And they'll get all up in your business, like, where you from? What's your family's last name? How many siblings do you have? That's just the type of family that I come from. So I just want to encourage. And I know that all may not have large families. Some folks that came with the up north through the Black migration, we're leaving a lot of trauma, you know, lynchings and all types of crazy stuff, you know, the racism. And so some people got up north and did not want to look back. So there is a disconnect. And some families, everybody kind of came up north. But I just encourage those who may still know of family members down there, go take a trip, even if people, your immediate family is not that close with them, call them and say, hey, can I come down one weekend? And you'll be surprised. They will provide you with a lot of Southern comfort, and you can ask questions and learn so many stories. Every family has griots and storytellers and dynamic characters and a lot of different heirloom items inside the home that's just kind of sitting there, you know, collecting dust. Every time I go down there, I go into my great grandmother's house, and because my great uncle just hoards all this stuff, and I just look and see if it's an item that calls me, and I walk out with it. I'd be like, can I get this? You know, I even have a box of he actually gave me these like 10 years ago, a box of my great grandmother's hats. He was like, oh, you know, I've been holding on to these. So I got my great grandmother's church hat, some of her brooches. And my great grandmother was one of them type of women she loved costume jewelry. So she was the type that would put a ring on every finger. And stuff.
Come through, Grandma. Yes.
Grandma Easy, she was like that. And so I have her hats, and I'm very blessed. And so if someone passes away in the family, I'll wear their hat down there, and I'll wear the brooch to a wedding or something and tell my grandmother, this was your mom's and stuff.
Oh,
like
my
that.
Gosh. I love that so much.
Yeah.
So much. So much.
Filani, there's so many other things that I want to talk to you about, and I'm like about to run out of time. So we're going to
do
a part two.
Fast.
I know it was fast, but no, we still have a few more moments, but I want to get into the Southern brunch, right? So we talked a little bit about, you know, how you got into gardening and growing and the birthing of Bird's Nest, but, mm-hmm. and Bird's Nest is also a part of the Southern brunch, like very much so a part of the Southern brunch. And so I'm looking forward to going, this is really a Southern brunch, y'all. Okay. Like you're getting fed, but like you really got to come to a Southern brunch hosted by Filani, a Bird's Nest box.
Yes.
So can we talk? Because the Southern box is just like a fusion of like all the things you've talked about tonight, like your family, good food, you know, like awesome produce, like greens, like all the things, like it fuses all the things together. So can we, for the congregation, talk about the Southern church? And if y'all don't go to church,
that's
totally fine. I ain't judging, all right?
The Southern brunch.
The Southern brunch.
Okay, so... The Southern brunch is inspired. So, okay, I'm a long story person, but I talk about my father's family a lot because we're closer. But I learned a lot of my culinary skills from my mother, whose family is from Alabama. And my mom can really throw down. Like, she was that cook in D.C., you know, we grew up where she did fish fries and sold dinners. She sold plates before this stuff became popular. Cousin, my name is spelled with an A, just so you know. But we're going to get to that. So Southern Brunch is a collaboration with myself and my dessert diva. She is also a Northern girl, but she grew up, you know, down North Carolina in summer times and has picked up a lot of recipes from her family. And so she makes really, really delicious desserts. I'm not necessarily, I can bake when I want to, but it's a little too scientific for me. So I prefer to cook food. So she has this thing called the Supper Club. And so we would brainstorm and talk about what type of event we can do together. And I said, well, let's do a Southern brunch. And so it's a series of brunches. I had to postpone July's due to my grandfather's passing. And so we're going to just pick back up in September because August is already here. And I have a lot going on, so much to catch up on. So we're going to pick back up in September for the next Southern brunch. We may just roll over that the menu. However, there's some things that's probably different things that's going to be in season. So it may change. Okras should be harvesting then.
Yay for the okra.
So we'll
love
modify.
Me some okra.
I'll still have the quiche up there. And Lynette is going to be baking some... peach pound cakes, strawberry shortcakes. You can get a choice of desserts. The ticket also comes with two cocktails or virgin cocktails if you don't drink. And yes, I did it. And so that's the Southern brunch is really about paying homage to our Southern roots and bringing that good old Southern comfort up north to you all. And it is really chill. It's not real uppity, but it's very nice, you know, and you can network, learn a little bit about us. And at the next one, we do plan to have a little country corner, you know, like the little country stores that you can go to down south and find all the country goods.
Oh, yeah. Like, what kind of goods? We're talking like snacks or like...
Snacks, dry mixes.
Oh, my gosh.
Lynette's going to have some dry mixes. So if y'all want to go home and whip up some of the stuff like that we had at the brunch.
So if I want to go home and find me some like good fish, you're going to have a good mix of something for me. Actually, I got to honor my aunt's recipe. So I can't do that, but okay. I'm just throwing out an example. Okay.
Right. That's a nice example. You know, it could be a jar of bread and butter pickles there. It could be, you know, some fresh produce that I've harvested. It may be some mini quiches if you want to go home and you know, keep the vibe going from the Saturday brunch. On
I
the
can't
Sunday.
Talk about this no more, Filani, because I just.
It listen. May be some strawberry preserves.
Listen, my sister already put in chat, my God. Like,
yes, sissy.
She also asked, what part of Alabama? Because, again, my mom is from Alabama. My mom's family's from Alabama.
They're from Birmingham, but I think okay. They originated in Anniston. Alabama before they went to Birmingham.
Okay. My mom is from a very small town. You blink, you miss it. That's how small it is. Butler.
Yeah.
Very, very small. Like, very small.
I remember going to Goodwater too to visit some of her relatives, Goodwater, Alabama. But I think most of them kind of came out of Anniston and moved to Birmingham. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Oh my goodness.
Well, I'm Brown Lauderdales. I don't know if y'all know some Lauderdales are brown. You know how Alabama is.
We Carlisles.
We be cousins.
Carlisles.
Okay.
Carlisles. Okay. And I tell my family, keep that name. You don't run into many black Carlisles at all. So there's more to be said about our names and how we were named.
Course.
But
of course.
Another conversation for another day.
Totally.
All right. Who's coming to brunch? I'm there. Whenever you post the next one, who's coming with me? I'm only going to ask once. All right. And I'm leaving y'all in the dust. And you do you offer a vegan option as well?
Yes, I do.
I only ask that out of respect.
The vegans was hounding me. Damn. Like, what about us, sis? So, yes, I do. Offer a vegan menu from now on out. I will have you covered. I don't eat pork anyway, so that would never be on a menu. But Lynette and I have came up with some vegan desserts and other stuff. So vegans, I have you covered. Okay.
Yes, Myra said, sign me up.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it. All right. So we're going to wrap up very soon in just a few moments, but I don't want to leave our conversation, cousin, without talking about a really great community, what I'm going to call like a community event, community gathering on Saturdays that you do call Seed Saturdays Culture. Did I say that right?
Seed and Culture Saturdays.
Y'all see, I'm human. I'm human.
And no worries.
Okay.
It's kind of like a tongue twister.
It is a tongue twister. But let's get into this seed. Say it again. Say it again, cousin.
Seed and Culture Saturdays.
Seed and Culture Saturdays. It sounds like a party. It's a party, y'all. I love it. Can we talk about that, please?
So Seed and Culture Saturdays is a series of, it's going to be going on for 3 years. This is the first year. It is a series of seedling workshops where we come and plant seedlings of African-American staple crops, and that is okra, butter beans, collards, watermelon, yellow squash, and beets. And those are like six crops that my family always had kind of going down south. And so the purpose of this workshop is to encourage others to grow, and as well as talk about these staple crops and distribute the seedlings to the community so that they can grow. And just like when people come to the workshop, I tell them, you can grow this squash in a pot. You can grow this okra in a pot. You do not necessarily have to have a backyard or a huge space, you know, to do some of these crops in. So that's what Seed and Culture Saturdays is about. We basically talk about the crops. Most of the time people share stories like you and myself about, you know, because D.C. is filled with a lot of Carolinians from North and South Carolina. So a lot of those people have bought up homesteads and used to have stuff going in their backyards too. So I like when young people come and say, oh, my grandma had a garden in her backyard, but I never kind of really bothered with it, but now I'm interested. So I try to use that as a platform to encourage people of all ages to grow. And so it's intergenerational. All ages are welcome. It occurs at the Ward 8 Well in Southeast and Oxen Run Park. It is a free workshop. And the next one is on August 6th. And where we'll be selling okra seedlings that we planted and planting some more collard seedlings. I just checked on the collards. They're moving a little slow, but the okras are standing kind of strong. And some people have even sent me pictures of their squash seedlings that they got from the last workshop. So, yes.
I love that. Outcomes, impact. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stories. Yes. Right. All right, y'all. Cousin, tell the congregation where to find you. Where to find you online, where to find you to get some good greens. Absolutely. Y'all better stay on top of that Southern Brunch. I'm only going to ask you once, and I'm leaving y'all in the dust.
And the tickets are very limited. We have limited space. Lynetta and I are just two people, four hands. So, we really kind of capped this thing off at 30 people because it's, you know, we're limited with our hands and space. So
I like the smaller group.
And it's nice. Too. It's more intimate. We can talk. People can meet each other and things like that. So hop on it when the ticket sales come out. I'm going to meet with her because I think we should redo the menu because things are going to – green tomatoes are going to be out of season probably by the time we get there. We like to do everything fresh. So if I don't grow my stuff, I've gone down North Carolina or visited some friends who grow in the area and sourced some local homegrown produce to make the dishes. And what else did you ask me?
I asked you to tell people where to find you so they can know where to go up for this brunch.
Okay, so the brunch happens in the Hyattsville Historic District. And
where to find you online, I mean, like to follow you, Bird's Nest Box,
Twitter. Follow me at Bird's Nest Box, BYRDSNESTBOX. My website is birdsnestbox.co. I need to get better with doing newsletters because I realize I have a audience that's not really on Instagram. But right now, Instagram is really where I do a lot of promotion. And then I just be going through my phone and texting people stuff, too. So
sometimes it bees that way. That's the fastest way. Show up to the live. Pull up.
Okay. I do need to do a newsletter. But if you follow me on IG, I post all of my events there, whether it's the Seed and Culture Saturdays or the Southern Brunch or my farm stand pop-ups that happen at New Brooklyn Farms. I'm most likely going to do an event August 14th in which I'm hashing out some of the details. I'm collaborating with a Nigerian sister, Tobe. She's coming in from Nigeria. She's really, really dope. She does this self-care Sundays situation. So we're collabing. And August 14th, something's happening. And then Southern Brunch will reconvene in September. But follow me, you all. And Mel, I'm so thankful for you inviting me. I'm so happy that we met.
Of course. Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in. You can catch today's episode on iTunes, Spotify, and Simplecast. And be sure to follow us at Food Talks in Color, that's just the letter N, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And did you know we are on Patreon? This is a way for you to take action and support our mission of amplifying BIPOC voices on the Edible Activist Podcast. Visit patreon.com/foodtalksincolor to learn more. peace and blessings. And remember, in the great words of Baba Tariq Adunu, there is no culture without agriculture.